Welcome to The Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White. Joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. And you?
I'm doing great.
Thanks.
Look, it has often been said, I think, from me, because I get excited when we get we talk about something on the show that we haven't talked about before.
True.
And here we are, like 300 or some odd episodes in, and it continues to happen.
I know. And in fact, we've had a lot of conversations lately where we're like, wow, that is really interesting, and we haven't covered this before. So there'll be a whole spate of interesting topics coming up on the Cooler Ring.
Exactly. Everybody that's listening to the show is like going to get sick and tired of listening to me say, I'm really excited. We haven't talked about this, but nevertheless, I'm not faking it. I haven't done that. We aren't. It's really refreshing. And I think it speaks to just how many layers there are to this manufacturing marketing onion, so to speak.
Absolutely. That deserves its own podcast, The Manufacturing Marketing Onion.
Which, do we do a kind of a riff on the onion, basically, and just try to do, I don't know. All right, we're going to lose the plot. We need to get back. Bring it back, Jeff.
If we do, we have to bring it back. So, I'm really excited. We're going to be chatting about retention today and expansion of accounts. And it's not, as you say, it's not something we've covered before. But man, if you go to a B2B sales conference, especially one in manufacturing, this is all you'll hear about. Retaining and expanding existing accounts. It's rarely about hunting and finding new ones.
And I don't want to dismiss the reactivation part either, because that's an interesting kind of middle point between retention and expansion in some way. Well, without further ado.
Indeed. So joining us today is Ruth Stevens. Ruth is the president of eMarketing Strategy. Welcome to the Cooler Ring, Ruth.
Thanks. I'm so glad to join you, gentlemen.
Ruth, you say that now, but it's early days in the report. I want to really thank you for joining us. It's a delight to have you on the show. And perhaps we could just start by learning a little bit more about you and how you spend your days, if you would. So maybe fill our listeners in and give them a bit of background.
Thanks. I've been a self-employed consultant in B2B marketing, sole practitioner type, for 25 years now. And I'm also a professor of marketing at NYU Stern Business School here in New York City.
Very cool. And you said 25 years like it was a bad thing or something, but you're just getting started.
You know, I like that attitude. Thank you. I'm going to adopt it immediately.
Look, a good friend of mine just recently sold his agency, actually. He was based in New York, New Jersey. And, he's well into his 70s. And I believe he was just a couple of days after selling the agency, he incorporated a new business. So, that for somebody who's 50, that gave me a lot of future perspective, I thought.
Yeah, entrepreneurialism is a bit of it gets in you.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to do something.
Yeah.
Look, Ruth, it's a delight to have you on the show. And I'd like to, we're diving into this topic of retention, reactivation, expansion. Is this both something that you lecture on as well as assist clients with?
It is. And it's been an underemphasized factor in B2B marketing for as long as I've been in the field. So I consider it a personal mission to almost proselytize about it. And the business case is just so clear. Anyone who's been in the world of customer management can explain the logic that much of our profits come from current customers. And the value of a current customer is, some people say, as much as 6 times that of a potential prospect. And at the same time, as marketers in a B2B company, we are often focusing 100% of our efforts on customer acquisition, namely prospecting and lead gen. And so that means that it's the sales force. Account management is usually the name of it, sometimes customer success. the sales force has the entire responsibility for managing the current customer relationship, which is great. You know, they're really good at it. But that means that marketing, thinking, tools, tactics, strategies are going to waste in that area. So what I like to say is you can maybe double your revenue without bringing in a new customer if you just pay attention to current customers, keep them longer, encourage them to buy more, and extract more value from that particular relationship.
I'm struck by the insult that we foist onto salespeople frequently, which is and I'm guilty of this. We'll talk to whether it's a prospect or just somebody we're interviewing on the podcast or what have you, and I'll ask them about their sales organization and how much time they spend hunting versus farming. And it's absolutely a pejorative question because I know they're going to say farming, and I know we're all going to believe that hunting is the more valuable activity and that you just can't get those poor salespeople to do it. But you're actually, like, you're in praise of farming here, which is, I
am. Kind of,
and I think so much of the, you know, frankly, modern thinking on this is that, you know, if we're going to farm accounts, we need maybe to use it like a customer success team or a customer service team and try to find ways for the salespeople to sell. I guess structurally speaking, is that what you advocate as well? Is that there should be a team more dedicated to it? Or are you saying, no, actually more and more of sales activity ought to be around retention and expansion of existing accounts? And it ought to follow the sales team.
I'm saying have the marketing trained members of the group add their expertise to the account management function. And, you know, I'm really not expert in organizational structures and, you know, who does what to whom. But I do know that if a sales trained and kind of culturally brought up person is the only one managing an existing customer relationship, then that relationship is going to be sub-optimized. And marketers are trained in a lot of the techniques that can expand and retain the customer longer, bigger.
Do you think, like, when you say that, are you talking about, you know, education on new products? I guess, well, you know, where are the expertise that you feel marketing really brings to this table?
Yeah, so, right, thank you. So one immediate example is data analytics. And, you know, assuming we have a marketing database of some sort where we can keep an eye on the customer behavior, watch what they're buying, how are we communicating with them, you know, dear old recency, frequency, and monetary value type thinking, then we'll see signals, business opportunity signals, we'll see possible defection signals, and that data can be an important driver of how we manage the account. That's just just one example.
How do you mobilize the account team with that information that perhaps they're not necessarily used to having that from a, you know, this is how our current customers are acting. You know, you should consider doing X, Y, or Z. You know, how are you kind of bringing that to life for them?
Well, a classic example is known as reasons to call, which is a data analysis that suggests based on the behavior in the account, and not only that particular account, but all the other accounts and our knowledge of how, you know, a great account behaves, we can provide the account managers with reasons to call, meaning a classic example is the cross-sell strategy, where we know that companies that buy product A often buy product B 3 months later. I'm making this up, of course. And then when product A is purchased, we notify the account manager that in 3 months they should introduce product B into that account. Just, and marketing can help too by providing collateral outbound communications and so forth. But the point is to be active in looking at the data signals for insight into how to manage the account more effectively.
I love that notion of reasons to call, like excuses to call in some way. Like, you think the account management function, whether it sits in sales or customer service, is somewhat irrelevant to the conversation in this point, because, you know, regardless of where it sits, those are, you know, they're busy people that have a to-do list today. And if there's not an excuse to call, a reason to call that kind of enters that to-do list, it's easy to imagine how how you can quickly become complacent. So, well, I assume that customer must be doing well because I haven't heard from them and there's no burning fire, so we can continue along.
Right. It's that really good, well put, because the salespeople are busy. And so this gets their attention. But I think even more importantly, it gives it provides value to the customer. I'm calling with some information that's going to help them do their jobs better.
And I would assume that even signals that they may be seeking alternative providers would certainly be a reason to call. It may be a tough conversation, but at least it's a reason to call. And I think most people would recognize that it's better to begin that conversation than out of it, just getting the advised later that you're being switched out or what have you.
Yeah, and in many B2B situations, those signals are extremely valuable, as you pointed out, but they're also hard to find. What we marketers have relied on for years is the recency and frequency of interactions. But beyond that, it becomes intel, you know, that may not be in our database. So another great strategy is to have our ear to the ground, keeping an eye on our competitors and what they're up to, and, you know, the classic spying, if I can put it that way.
Well, I think the good news is for today's marketers that are leveraging kind of account-based marketing platforms, which I appreciate is not everybody, and it's not like they're incredibly inexpensive platforms to implement. But for those that are, you know, the intent data signals that can come from that, you can monitor intent for your competitors as well. If you see existing customers tripping on intent for competitors, it could be interesting to action that data.
I'm really glad you raised the subject of ABM, because when that concept came along, I was in heaven. At last, we have sales and marketing and everybody else working together on a particular account. But I'm still not hearing that is getting to this retention and reactivation and expansion approach that I'm preaching on here. What about you guys? Do you see that part of the ABM mantra or you know, mindset?
It certainly happens, but I think what you're experiencing and what you're noticing is real, in that the technology exists, the capabilities are there. That's not the problem. It's a cultural thing. It's an organizational cultural thing, and that takes a time to change.
And measurement.
And it takes a bit of stick-to-itiveness, I think, for people to stay on that path. And
leadership.
Like, yeah. I think one of the problems that we have is we sometimes expect the purchase of the technology is what actually changes things. But it's rather this intelligent use of the technology and integrating it into our culture and systems that really changes things. And I don't know how many times people really give that its due. And I would say your critique is could be put upon marketing automation technology as well. I would bet that there's an awful lot of people listening out there that have technology that's capable of nurturing clients in a much more in a much more robust way than they're actually implemented. Yeah.
And I think the other part of that as well is that, you know, ABM platforms are, yes, as you mentioned, Carmen, they are expensive, but the media buy and the media spend in order to actually leverage them at the level that they need to be in order to see success often means that there isn't budget left for media to provide air cover for existing accounts when you're spending all of your time trying to get lift in awareness and at the front end of the funnel, you know? So,
yeah, to Ruth's point, people are looking to attract new customers, and it's actually diluting the effectiveness of their ABM programs.
Yeah, they could be making more money if they focused entirely on hitting the accounts that are already paying them.
Yeah, it's interesting.
You guys are making me depressed. Because really, I mean, the promise of ABM was targeted to existing customers, right? It wasn't about new customer acquisition, as I understood it anyway.
Well, it's about identifying your target account, target accounts. That could be both existing customers and known prospects, certainly. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. I've been engaged in an awful lot of ABM conversations, and I can't think of one that started from the point of view of existing customers first. So yes, Ruth, you have every reason to be depressed. Well, look, we don't want to depress our listeners, however.
Right.
Typically try not to depress the guests either.
But every once in a while. There's a couple of different, when we talk about retention versus reactivation versus expansion, yes, those can seem like, you know, three pretty close cousins. But then sometimes when I look at it, I'm thinking, those are very different motions, very different skill sets required to retain somebody versus expand a relationship. I'm thinking about if you called up your bank and you tell them you're canceling or what have you, well, they'll like send you to the retention specialist. You know? My guess is that that's a different person than the expansion specialist. But are there any kind of you know, skill sets, mindsets that you feel kind of need to be instilled in an organization to really excel here? And how do they differ between retention, reactivation, and expansion?
Ah, that's two questions. All right.
Maybe even three.
So I guess I should start with the second piece, the answer to which is we have to have metrics in place or goals. Meaning numbers-related goals that are pretty easy to get because unlike top of funnel where things are still pretty vague when it comes to dollars and hard metrics, in this case, we have a clear idea. Unless there is a distributor between us and the end buyer, that's another matter we might want to discuss. But it's important for everyone on the account team or in the business of current customer marketing and customer expansion and so forth to have a goal, a financial goal. And backing out of that, then, I'd like to address your first question about the mindset that I think the whole team, beginning with the account manager and everyone else who's helping, needs to understand that there are two fundamental must-dos in current customer relationship management. And the first one is that when we acquired them as a customer, we set some kind of expectation in their minds, and we have to deliver and likely exceed against what we promised them in the first place. And if we haven't done that, then all the tactics and cool ideas I have to share with you about retention and expansion are going to fail. And then the second thing is, if we do screw up, we have to have in place a fast and effective customer service function that can identify the problem, react to it, learn from it, and resolve the problem to the customer's satisfaction. So in many B2B companies, the people who are responsible for those two functions may not even be known to the account manager. You know, it's somebody over, you know, in India or who knows where, the other side of the building, never met them, don't even know that they have something to do with my account. So that becomes a leadership and organizational issue, a cultural issue, like you said, Carmen. It's, you know, it's really the fundamental must do, because then the tactical stuff that I'm going to share with you, as I said before, is going to go nowhere if those two must-haves are not being delivered upon.
Well, I certainly do want to hear this tactical advice that you're speaking of, but my goodness, I feel like I've already gotten some around your notion of this work is actually more easily measured. You can get better revenue attribution than you, or at least easier revenue attribution than doing things like top of funnel pipeline measurement and things of that nature, which is inherently fuzzy. I think that's a message that could really resonate with the senior leadership that marketers need to convince.
Those guys are convinced already. I would imagine that a senior executive is communicating some kind of expectation for how much each account, probably differentiated by certain variables, company size, industry, so forth, but how much they expect that account to expand financially or even at the bottom line, at profitability every year. And if you don't meet those goals, you don't get your bonus. You know?
Yeah, but it is easy, I think, for everybody to fall into that trap, as you say, of trying to attract more top of funnel awareness than it is nurturing existing customers. And I think that more easily measured revenue attribution, yeah, that's a really, it's a good lever to pull. So what are the tactics? So let's look in the crystal ball and say we have all the aforementioned in place. We're setting expectations with new accounts, and we're meeting them. And we have a bit of a screw up fixer on our customer service function that has allowed us to get by any hiccups in the road. What are the tactics that are really going to drive success for us at that point?
Well, a couple of things. The most obvious is what I call penetration marketing, which is basically cross-selling and upselling. We're trying to get them to buy more and buy more frequently, buy bigger. That's the classic upsell. You know, at McDonald's, they want you to supersize your order. And there are lots of marketing tools that can support that. I already talked about cross-selling as a reason to call, where we keep an eye on buying patterns in similar accounts, and we go back to the customer and say, here's a product that we think you're going to need. Another strategy is called continuous buying, or sometimes it's called automatic replenishment or subscription, where you convince them that it's the type of product that's most efficient when they have a standing order, and every month you send them a new, you know, refill of the product. And there are many B2B categories where, especially in manufacturing, where those are already in place, and you can look around for more and get creative the way, you know, experts at this like Amazon have been doing for years. I mean, after sales support services, geez, you know, how about if you sell a package of repairs or, you know, maintenance that's a service level that's billed by subscription, and you know our guys are ready to fly out to your factory anytime you have a problem, and it's only going to cost you $100,000 a month. No, whatever. I don't know, making that up. Replacement parts is another category. Just-in-time components, and you know, and then of course services like financing and other categories where you can charge on an ongoing automatic basis, which immediately eliminates the sales function. You know, once it's in place, it's automatic, and the onus, the burden of you know, the sale kind of shifts to the customer, you know, that they have to cancel if anything's going to happen. And we get to sit back and just, you know, let the orders go out the door. It's a wonderful thing. So, there are tactics like that if we get creative, you know, there are ways that we can package up some of our aftermarket offerings into subscription or auto replenishment programs.
You're making my head spin on how this could impact, how marketers can really improve that function. I mean, you mentioned before about distributors and dealers, and sometimes that can create a bit of an extra nuance around this. And, you know, I was thinking when you mentioned that, it's like, yeah, because co-selling with dealers and distributors, if you're a manufacturer, is, you know, sometimes difficult. It sometimes maybe don't get into that true co-selling model. But the marketing material that supports that channel relationship, that can, you know, those sales enablement tools that are often generated by the marketing side of the house would be play a key part in that. And
also the strategy, meaning the manufacturer who is deep into these product categories knows really more deeply than anybody else how those products serve the market,
how they fit together, et cetera.
Exactly. Yeah. And can create ideas for post sales programs that the distributors, who are essential to cover the market that we can't cover with our own salespeople, will really benefit from. You know, maybe they didn't think of it. So when we go to our distributors with programs, they'll be thrilled to carry them into the account.
And I was picking on that because, I mean, when you talk about things like financing as part of like almost like tangential service, like thinking about a subscription model or what have you, I mean, those are, you know, very different things to sell. I can imagine a technical salesperson not feeling particularly comfortable with introducing the notion of financing a piece of equipment, or, you know, who knows, right? It kind of exercises a muscle that they're not used to exercising. So, you know, again, a good opportunity for marketing to insert itself there and give the talk track, give the material that supports that conversation, et cetera.
The marketer that is helping strategize different financing programs and different ways of selling and subscriptions and all of that, a bit of a different person than is probably working more on the digital side and, you know, ABM and PPC and more of that kind of front end of it. And this may be a bit of an incendiary question, I don't know. But do you think that marketers in upsell and account expansion roles should be compensated differently? More like a salesperson, more, you know, if they're the ones coming up with the idea of a subscription service or a ongoing service and maintenance or whatever that is, and they're helping sell that through, should they be compensated in a similar way to what a salesperson would be in terms of commission?
I think existing account marketers are already on some kind of compensation plan that includes performance bonuses of some sort. So I got to tell you guys, I am really not knowledgeable or I don't have a lot of experience in that area. But I know when I worked at IBM years ago, we used to call we marketers in, unfortunately, not a friendly way, would call the salespeople coin-operated machines. And in order to get them to do anything, you had to provide a financial incentive. You might want to cut that whole comment from...
I don't know. I like it. Look at it. It does... I mean, it is a part of the tension, but I think it also addresses Jeff's question a little bit around how wise is it to incentivize the marketers to be... Because frankly, I can imagine a comp structure that actually encourages more conservatism and less creativity on the marketing side from account. You don't know if a subscription model is going to work. You don't know if the customer base is really going to embrace financing, as an example, or equipment as a service versus a CapEx expenditure. You know, those are things that you need to experiment with, and I think businesses ought to experiment with them. And I'm not sure putting the marketer on too much of a leash financially is helpful there. Anyway, thinking out loud. I just don't want to turn the marketer into the coin-operated machine.
Hmm.
You know? But we won't cast aspersions on your time at IBM at all. Ruth, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. I wonder, as we kind of come to a close here, what do you think is the biggest thing around the corner, the thing that you're seeing in the future of marketing and sales that is either going to dramatically enable your vision for retention, reactivation, and expansion, or is going to stand in the way of it? I'd be curious, what are you seeing? Is this an idea that's going to catch on even more, or is this going to continue to be something you feel like you're pushing uphill?
Well, the easy answer is AI. That's the universal answer to that question today. But the question of whether traditional B2B companies are going to be thinking these kinds of marketing thoughts, it remains to be seen. I thought with ABM that we were on the path to glory. I also thought with digital marketing, where it's typically the marketers who have more experience in the digital world than salespeople, that we were headed in that direction. But as you guys pointed out, it's really a cultural matter. And I would add, it's a leadership matter. And the senior executives that I know in industrial companies tend to come up through sales. And they're not thinking marketing thoughts. So that doesn't bode well for my little proselytizing here. But that's the reality. I sometimes say in B2B, sales flies the plane and marketing serves the coffee. because that's traditionally been, the help meet role that marketing has provided. But that has changed too, what with the arrival of the internet, the arrival of data, the comfort level of the buyer with digital. I mean, we all know how the buying circle in industrial businesses is dominated by younger people for whom digital communications are just a matter of fact. And so, and it's typically the marketers who have the most experience in that area. So I remain hopeful.
I do as well, Ruth. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us today. It's been just a delight to have you on the show.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you both.
Thank you.